Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I am your host, Ken Molman, and this is the My View Matters Radio Network. Down. There we go. Sometimes the sound likes to go up and down. I don't know why. But it is another Sunday night. It is 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and we're here live. Got a handful of things to handle, but just starting off on a lighter note, doing a lot of grass mowing today. It's just been unbearably hot, and so trying to put that off as long as I can. But there comes a time when it's time to cut down the jungle, and that was my fun for today. Other than that, there's some other sillinesses and just random things going on. One of the things I saw a few weeks ago that I thought was just hilarious is the political rhetoric generator, and it randomly generates political rhetoric, which is hilarious. So the one I've got pulled up here says, quote, "When I'm elected, I'll make sure that shifty Canadians and high-paid lobbyists can't undermine our glorious future." We'll throw in a few of those as we go through the show tonight. But if you'd like to call in tonight about any liberty issue in general, things I've got queued up, we've got the U.S. Senate race in Kentucky starting to heat up, drones and sillinesses around that, NDAA, we've got Obamacare, and a handful of other miscellaneous things. So if you'd like to call in again, 858-683-1326, 858-683-1326. The chat room is open if you'd like to chat away in there. I only really check that during the break, but you know, you're willing or more than allowed or encouraged to talk to other listeners in there. So anyway, interesting, non-political, but in general important thing that's out there is from the IT world, which those of you who have followed the show know that that's what I do for a living. One of the things that's out there is now that the 8-character password is no longer secure. So in the past, a lot of systems actually only allowed for a password up to 8 characters long, you know, letters, numbers, whatever. And they've tried to get more complex, and they've tried to make them more difficult over time, making you use numbers and capital letters and lowercase letters and symbols and all that kind of stuff. But anymore, with the power of modern computers, an 8-character password is really not that hard to what we know as brute force crack. And so basically a brute force is they'll take an 8-character password and the generator will just start at, you know, the very first character and compare it. They'll re-encrypt it the same way your password's encrypted and then compare it against the results to see if it matches. And so the point is now we're at a point where the 8-character password is no longer secure. Obviously, using words in your password has not been secure for a long time. And so those of you out there who are on the internet, which obviously you are because you're listening to this show, your accounts out there are not safe if they're only 8 characters long. And in fact, I would venture to say that that's what's been causing the issues with Yahoo Mail lately. Those of you who have seen people getting hacked on Yahoo, I'm thinking that at some point they must have had their passwords stolen or something, because there's been a lot of people on Yahoo specifically who have been sending spam out to miscellaneous people on their contact lists and sent email lists and all that kind of thing, out there just sending garbage to junk websites and whatever. So change password, folks, and make sure that it's secure. Make sure that it's longer than 8 characters long, and, you know, take care of other stuff on that front too. But the point is 8-character passwords are no longer safe. So getting into the politics of things, much to do this past week, about Louisville businessman Matt Bevin, who is set to enter the Senate race here in Kentucky as a Republican to challenge Mitch McConnell in the primary. Obviously, Mr. Bevin faces quite an uphill challenge. McConnell has a lot of money and a lot of influence around the state. He's already gotten the endorsement of a bunch of elected Republicans around the state. But at the same time, Mitch McConnell is vulnerable. McConnell has had a number of very questionable votes, especially on liberty issues. McConnell has supported the NDAA. He supported the Patriot Act. He supported the bank bailouts. He supported a number of anti-liberty bills and laws. And so I guess the point is, this is going to be an interesting race. What I'm being told is that Mr. Bevin has some cash to throw around, and that he's former military, that he is going to be somebody who it'll be interesting to see. McConnell's camp is already out bashing Mr. Bevin before he's even officially joined the race, but it'll be interesting. The interesting thing about McConnell's camp is that anyone who dares to run against McConnell must be doing Barack Obama's bidding, and I think that's a pretty silly tagline, one that we hear a lot out of the Republicans specifically, that anybody who's not a Democrat, who's not a Republican, must be somebody who is just a shill for the Democrats or a shill for XYZ candidate or whatever. And we hear that a lot. And those of you that have been with the show for some time know my political leanings and that I'm deeply involved with the Libertarian Party of Kentucky. So I get a lot of this directed at me. And whatever. You know, I mean, it's hilarious to me. Anybody who really knows what my organization is doing, anybody who really understands what's going on out there, knows that these things that are said are just lies, just straight up and down lies. But it's interesting, and it'll be interesting to watch this come about. I suspect that there may be more people that pop up. I think that on the Democratic side, I think I saw that there are actually three or four candidates in the race, and at least one of them has cried foul that the Democratic Party and the media in general is really only focusing on Allison Grimes. And I do think that that's wrong. I mean, anybody who jumps into the race should be treated equally by the media. Otherwise, the media is helping determine the outcome of the race. And I think that's a disservice to their readers and a disservice to the political process in general. You know, anybody who goes through the rigmarole to get in the race should be treated equally, at least at a minimum, by the media. And the media shouldn't play a big role in these races anyway, other than simply to report on what's going on. Don't just reprint the press releases. Don't reprint the press statements. You know, really pay attention to the details of the race, right? I mean, okay, Mitch McConnell's out at XYZ event, or this person is at some other event or whatever. And you can even say they said this and that there, and that's all fine. But when the media, and I know this from personal experience having run anti-libertarian, when the media ignores a candidate with a legitimate platform, it's a little bit frustrating that, you know, as it stands, anyone who is not a Republican or Democrat is typically underfunded. And anyone who is not favored by the establishment of a party when running in a primary is underfunded as it is. It becomes infinitely harder to get your campaign spun up when all of the media is focused around the front runner, rather than focusing equally on each candidate and letting the voters decide. I think that that's the right role for the media. The media should be deciding nothing. They should be putting out what's going on and letting the public decide one way or the other. And it's kind of interesting because the media has done a lot of moaning and groaning in recent years about bloggers and about all the new competition to the media. And the thing is, they're doing the same thing, the very same things they accuse the bloggers of doing. Oh, well, you're biased. You're putting out an opinion piece, not a fact-based piece. Well, when you exclude candidates who have done the work to be put on the ballot, and you can put baselines on it. I mean, for a federal race, typically speaking, a candidate needs to be legally able to hold the office. That's a pretty good start. Having done the paperwork required to officially get their campaign underway, both at the federal and the state level, and I think that's a pretty good threshold right there. You know, have they done the basics to be considered legally a candidate? Now, oftentimes when I was running for office, there were a lot of organizations that did not want to let me speak at their events. And that was because at the time I was still collecting signatures to get onto the ballot. Those of you who don't know about ballot access in Kentucky, any Republican or Democrat running for any partisan office in the state needs only two signatures, to get onto the ballot for any partisan office in the state. For anyone who is not a Republican or Democrat, independent, libertarian, green, whatever it is, you're going to need between 25 and 5,000 signatures to get onto the ballot. And because of the high bulk of having to reach 5,000 signatures, you're really going to have to collect more than that. And the rule of thumb is 50% more. I turned in 8,200 and change signatures for my race, and the Republicans still started to try to sue me off the ballot and then dropped the lawsuit 3 days later. And they complained that it was too hard to validate the 8,250 signatures. And, well, you know, if you think it was hard to validate, you should have been the one trying to collect them. That was even harder. But the point is, you know, there's certain legal hurdles to anyone running outside of the Republican and Democrat circles. And then on the compound of the issue, the media just ignores the campaign. I mean, it's amazing to me that major media outlets just outright ignored my campaign. And I understand I'm not asking for a half hour or 3 hours or, you know, a ridiculous amount of time. But, hey, how about mentioning I exist? How about mentioning that I'm on the ballot? How about mentioning what my platform is just once? When you have the platform of the other people in there, you know, just treat it equally. I wasn't even asking for the same amount of time. And that same bias in the general plays out in the primary as well. Now, for the McConnell race, this is going to be interesting because McConnell has a lot of political enemies. And some of those enemies are in the media. And the media likes to make it hard on certain people. And I believe one of those people will be Mitch McConnell. So I have a feeling that we're going to hear a lot from Mr. Bevin. And assuming that he runs his campaign in a legitimate manner, the media is going to want to play that up because they're going to want to cause derision inside of the Republican Party one way or the other. And so that'll be very interesting to see how the media keys into all this. But don't be surprised, folks, if you're somebody looking to an alternate candidate and you don't like your choices that the media is spoon-feeding, that you're not hearing a lot out of the others, because while they may be out doing the work, and in my case, I certainly was. I was all over this state. The media just ignores it. I mean, I was at events where literally the media would interview Republican and Democratic candidates that were there. I'd walk up, say hi. They knew who I was because I'd introduced myself previously, but do no interview with me. I mean, really? You couldn't do a two-minute interview? It's just really, really frustrating and unfortunate, but it is what it is. And I guess the point is you have to look past the media to find your choices. And I always encourage people to vote for the best candidate. Do not be scared into being corralled into this lesser of two evils game where the thing that happened with the Republican primary last year, which was, well, Mitt Romney is the only guy who can beat Obama. Well, I guess nobody could beat him because Romney lost. The reality is I think there were other candidates that could have beaten Obama. It's that Romney was not the guy. But that was sure the mantra that was going around. And, you know, that's what they convinced a lot of people to support Romney in the primary was, oh, well, he could beat Obama. Well, no, that was a lie. And now hindsight proves that to be a lie. And so that's what I'm getting at is don't be corralled by the media. Don't be corralled by the talking heads for the Republican and Democratic parties. Do your thing. Do your own homework. Know who you're voting for and vote for the person that you like the best. And that's that. There's really nothing more to it. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to follow this race as it goes forward. And, you know, maybe I'll try to get a hold of some of the other candidates. Maybe we'll do that. I'll see if maybe we can get some of the candidates who have declared that are being ignored by the rest of media to come on and do an interview. I'll have to see if I can reach out and if they'd be willing to do that, given my political affiliation. It'll be interesting. I think that that could be something very beneficial to our listeners. All right, enough about that. We've got plenty to do, and I'm only doing the hour tonight. I've got to finish mowing my grass after the show. I have tons and tons of stuff to do around the house, so I want to get back to it here and knock this out. So, interestingly, the band Nannies are at it again. Just saw a story here about Michael Bloomberg in New York City. His nanny czar person with the food, the guy in charge of all the food bans and enforcing that stuff. The city of New York has now outlawed donations of food to homeless shelters because the city can't assess their fat, salt, and fiber content. Because, you know, obviously homeless people are the people that need to be worried about fiber and fat and salt. I mean, they're homeless. They have no job, obviously, or if they do have a job, it's not enough to sustain a household. In New York, that's not necessarily surprising. It costs a fortune there. But they're homeless. They have bigger problems than worrying about whether or not their meal has too much salt. Dun, dun, dun. Oh, no, not too much salt. And, you know, it's funny because we saw some of this, oh, what was that, a year and a half ago when the tornadoes tore through northern Kentucky. And the Northern Kentucky Health Department, or Independent Health District, as they're known, actually banned people from bringing prepared food to those who had just lost their homes to a tornado. I mean, really? Yeah, you know, that's their big concern. They've just lost their home. They've lost all of their possessions. They're probably not really worried about food preparation stuff. That's really not their main concern. And understand, for those of you that live in the city, what people in the country do when something good or something bad happens is you cook them a meal and you take it to them. I mean, that's what you do. You have a baby, people cook you a meal. You lose your house, people bring you a meal. I mean, that's the way it works in the country. And the health department literally stopped a church from receiving or distributing, rather, food that was not prepared on premise for the reason that the health department couldn't determine whether or not the food had been prepared or transported in a proper manner. Because obviously that's the main concern of those folks, is whether or not that food has been prepared or transferred in the proper manner. They just lost their freaking homes. Ridiculous. These health and food nannies are ridiculous people. And they prioritize things. Their priorities are just way off track. I mean, these are the same people that push for smoking bans. I mean, when we fought this up here in northern Kentucky, we were successful in two counties. The last county, they got a restaurant ban. And based on our math, they got like 12 restaurants and a bowling alley to have to go non-smoking. Other than that, everything else was kind of status quo. And they apparently dropped about $300,000 in up here. Of course, that didn't matter. It wasn't their money anyway. It came in through federal grant money through the Obama stimulus. these nannies can't control themselves. They always have to be muddling in someone else's affairs to protect them from themselves. It's what they're all about, protect people from themselves from making terrible mistakes. Oh, my gosh, that homeless person is eating way too much salt. We must protect the homeless from eating too much salt. Really? That's the big concern? Really? Oh, I don't know. These food people, the nannies, I don't get them. I really just don't get them. Completely shifting gears, one of the funny stories that I saw this week was that the FAA is warning the public against shooting at drones. And this is something that I had joked about probably last year or maybe a little longer ago about how long would it be until people started hunting the drones and started shooting them down. And Judge Napolitano had said something similar, and apparently other organizations had picked up on it as well. Now, I wasn't really serious about actually going out drone hunting, per se. But I think that the idea that it was so popular, the idea of shooting these drones down, was so popular because people fundamentally realize they're being spied on. And that's a problem. It's funny to me, you know, we talk about rights and how far do rights go and, you know, tying back to the smoking ban and all these different things are, you know, what's allowed and what's not, and where are lines drawn. And, you know, I think that everyone has a right to free speech. However, I think that if you're going to have free speech with a megaphone, right, artificial amplification, then it makes sense to have a permit, right? Because now you have the ability to affect people a lot more broadly than with just your voice. I mean, if you're cranking the volume and you know, much, much louder than normal, that kind of makes sense, right? You have a right to free speech. You can say whatever you want, but if you're going to amplify that and broadcast it to the public at large, and the public can't escape it simply by just walking away, well, okay, now it makes sense that maybe there's a permit process in place. But so long as it's not amplified, right, I think that you can say anything you want, anywhere you want, anytime you want, whatever, right? Now, if you're on private property and the private property owner says, hey, man, I don't want you saying that here, you know, you say it and I'm going to ask you to leave, well, I mean, that's a private property owner's right. But on public property, again, private versus public property, government-owned property, we should be allowed to say anything we want so long as it is not amplified or unnaturally loud, right? And that's kind of where I draw that line, personally. I think that there's also the idea of people being videotaped in public, right? And there's a lot of talk about cops being publicly recorded, and there's been a lot of debate, and I've been following a website called Photography is Not a Crime. And they do a lot of videotaping in public, and the police really don't like that. Despite the fact that their own cameras are recording what's going on in the public, they don't like to be recorded without their permission, which is ironic. Now, again, in the public space, you have no real expectation of privacy because you're in the public space. Now, there is a line drawn where you can't be recorded in the public space for commercial purposes. In other words, you can't be recorded for commercial purposes without your consent. And I think that that's a good line, right? Because I didn't agree for you to make money off of me, but for the purposes of openness and transparency and for the right of the public, if I'm not making money off of you, I have the right to record you when you're in public. You're in public. Hence the word public. That's kind of what it means. You're in public. Now, when you're in private, right, I don't have the right to record you if you are on private property and taking reasonable steps to not be seen in public, then if I go beyond that and record you without the permission of the property owner and without your permission, then I have violated your privacy. And there's been several court rulings back and forth on whether or not cops can spy on you in your own home. And I think the line does need to be drawn that when you're in your own home, there is a reasonable expectation of privacy so long as you're not standing in front of a window, right? If you're standing in front of a window and somebody records you through the window, video records you, then it makes sense, right? I mean, that's a line, right? Hey, if I'm at my home and I have the blinds pulled and whatever, I should be in privacy, right? And there's lots of good reasons that behind closed doors, remember, behind closed doors, that phrase, is private. Usually when we talk about behind closed doors, we're talking about government doing things that they should be doing transparently that they're not. But as individuals, we have that right to do things privately. The problem with the drones is that they're equipped with cameras that can see through things. The FLIR cameras that do a combination of infrared and night vision and all these different things. They put it together so that they can see what's there, even though it normally, by a human standard, would not be visible. And I think that that is where things get dicey, especially on private property. Now, on public property, you can make a case that we shouldn't have drones because you can't see that you're being recorded, whereas if you're in the street and you see somebody recording you, you can go into a private place and be done with that. But when you're in your own home, you should be protected with a shroud of privacy. I mean, it's your home. And I think most people pretty much get that. There is a reasonable expectation of privacy in your own home. The problem is that these drones can see through your walls. They can hear you through your walls, through amplification, through whatever. And that's a problem. Now, what brought this on, bringing it to a head, there's a small community of Deer Trail, Colorado, that is wanting to give hunting licenses to drones. And I think it's hilarious. The permits, the hunting permit is $25. And anyone who shoots down a drone would be awarded $100 if you present your hunting license and the identifiable pieces of a drone that's been shot down. Now, the FAA saying, well, you know, it's not really safe to be just shooting stuff out of the sky because, you know, that might land on somebody. Well, yeah, it might. In fact, there's been several cases reported where drones have just fallen from the sky for whatever reason, malfunction. I'm sure that they're protected from any liability if those drones that are flying around and not shot down but are just generically broken and fallen from the sky. Of course, there's no legal ramification, no liability for that. But the real crux of this, and I think this is hilarious, is there's actually a lobby group, the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International, that is really pushing this issue now because they're afraid people are going to start shooting down their drones. And I think what they're really afraid of is that there's a growing backlash against this surveillance nanny state stuff, just in general. The surveillance state is getting ridiculous, and more people are realizing it. We're going to get into reasons for that after the break, but they're really the ones that are bringing this to light because I think they're afraid that as more people start shooting these things down, or if they were to, that it could bring to light how many of them there are. It could bring to light how unpopular these things are, which in the end then means fewer sales for their company. And, you know, obviously the trade group is worried about sales for their industry. So I just think it's all pretty funny. Personally, you know what, if you shoot down a drone, and I don't recommend you do that because, well, it could land on somebody, and there could be legal ramifications, but if you did, I wouldn't be crying all night over it. Let's put it that way. I mean, that's pretty straightforward. You know, drone, whatever. You know, I have a real big problem with the lack of privacy having to do with drones monitoring the public. We're at the bottom of the hour. I'm going to take a break. When we come back, we've got Obamacare, NDAA. We've got a handful of other things spooling up here. But you are listening to Liberty Unbridled and the My View Matters radio network. We're here every Sunday night, and we'll be back here in just a few minutes. Stay tuned.
Crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
advertisers. Here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, and we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled, the My View Matters radio network, and we do have other shows. I sometimes forget to mention that we are part of a network here, and we have shows Sunday night through Thursday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Monday through Wednesday is the Ed Springsteen Show, and Thursday is Thursday Night Truth with Dale the Truth. And I encourage you to listen to all the shows, and they're all a little bit different, and they're all good in their own way. So anyway, just getting back to it here, and I apologize. That song ended rather abruptly. It does every time, I guess. But anyhow, getting back to it. So one of the things that has been interesting that was reported here about a week ago or so is the battle over NDAA indefinite detentions. And the federal judge that had originally banned indefinite detentions, they're now, the Court of Appeals in New York has said that the government does have the right to indefinitely detain people that fit the category of enemy combatants or provide enemy combatants with support, which whatever that means, and do so without due process. Now, when this bill, this was the NDAA of 2012, so there's an NDAA every year. It's the National Defense Authorization Act, which essentially funds the military for the following year. NDAA 2012 was the one that put in the provisions to allow indefinite detentions. And that obviously received bipartisan support because in 2012, there were both Republicans and Democrats. The House was controlled by Republicans. The Senate was controlled by Democrats. Obama had originally threatened to veto that legislation if it came with that attached. And in the end, he did not veto that legislation. What he did instead on a signing statement was basically said, hey, I sure don't like this indefinite detention stuff, but I'm going to sign it into law anyway. And I promise I won't use it for nefarious things. I promise. Now, you know, politicians and their promises, that and $2 and you have a cup of coffee. But, you know, my big problem with this is not only did Obama promise to veto this and failed to do so, but he made it clear that he did not want the indefinite detention of Americans during the campaign in 2012. And yet he did sign it into law. And while he could have just let it drop there and let the courts rule it unconstitutional after that first round, his administration is actively fighting to keep that particular provision. So not only did he fail in his promise to veto anything that would allow indefinite detention, he also is actively, his administration is actively fighting to keep that right. I don't even know where to begin with this. I mean, it's just such a lie. I mean, you're either for it or you're against it, man. And you say you're against it, but now your agents are fighting to keep it. Oh, and you promise not to use it for nefarious things. Well, that's great. Even if you keep that promise, it's still law, and you're out of office at the end of 2016. And there, as far as I'm aware, there's no time limit on how long this particular piece of law stays active. How long do we have indefinite detentions? Forever? It really bugs me. Due process is absolutely critical. We have beat this to death on the show before, but due process is absolutely critical. And these secret courts that force these companies to comply with all these different things and secret courts that allow for indefinite detentions, and there's no real check and balance here, and especially no check and balance from the public, which is extraordinarily important. Now, there's a story I have that The guy who published the information that Edward Snowden released says that he has enough information to cause the U.S. government the worst damage in history, and that's in quotes, worst damage in history. You know, the reality is what Snowden has released is not anything specific that puts any specific person in harm's way. What he's done is he has made the American public better aware of exactly what it is that the American government is doing. And it's important because we as Americans are, at the end of the day, supposedly the ultimate check and balance on our government. We're supposedly the ones that, through the ballot box, can keep the government in check. But if the government is specifically preventing the public from knowing about a program, then how is it that we, the people, can keep our government in check when our government is specifically prohibiting the people from getting the information required to make that decision? How? We can't. And that's a problem. And as a result of what Snowden has done, and we talked about this before, the mood of the country has swung against this monster of monitoring done by our government and the Office of National Security of monitoring American citizens, innocent American citizens. And they claim it's just metadata. Well, that's not true, and that's an abuse of the word metadata. But as a result, the mood of the country is shifting on the domestic spying. And as such, there's a story here that Congress is now kind of waking up and going, oh, well, yeah, the American people don't want this. And so now there is a move afoot to try to limit what the NSA can do. Now, in my opinion, chances are very good that the American or the any law that's passed won't go far enough. They'll still be spying on us and whatever. But there'll be some token feel-good legislation about, well, ah, and there'll be it'll give the legislators the ability to go back to their districts and say, well, I did my part in reeling in the NSA's overreach and spying and blah, 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 blah. And it probably won't go far enough. But had it not been for Snowden's exposure of this program, none of this would have happened. Again, the public, if the public is the check and balance through the ballot box, the public has to be informed about what's being done. And now that they've been informed on what's being done and the full scope of what's being done, the American public is saying, whoa, this is way too much. We did not sign on for this. And that's a good thing. Again, we need to be focused on pushing against this and stop being split all over the place on this. Speaking of Snowden, there was an interesting article that came out from the guy who leaked all this originally, the reporter that helped Snowden with the leak. And there's an email exchange between Snowden and a former Republican senator from New Hampshire. And basically the former Republican senator agrees with what Snowden has done and that he thinks that he's done the right thing in exposing. Let's see, the quote here is, he's done the right thing in exposing what I regard as a massive violation of the United States Constitution. And I agree. You know, there's been a lot of talk about this in Liberty circles, but regardless of whatever Snowden's future actions are, whatever he has, his intentions were, whatever all that, what we do see is that what he has done here has helped expose the American public to what's being done in their name and helped expose the full ramifications of this program. We have to know what's going on. This is very generic. I mean, it's not like they're specifically telling us, you know, the triggers and whatnot of who gets flagged. But, I mean, I talked about this before. A lot of times government gets in more trouble for not being transparent than for the policy itself. You know, it's the old adage, the cover-up is worse than the crime. It's the same thing, where when you try to keep secrets, it enrages the public. And openness and honesty in government is transparency, and transparency builds trust with the public. And if you want the public to trust what you're doing, then you need to be open and transparent with the public and honest. Be honest. And at times, it's not going to be popular to be honest. And be honest about that. The majority of voters get it. And if you're doing things that they disagree with, and there are legislators in the state with whom I disagree with some of the things that they do. But if I talk to them and they give me their reason and they understand my reason for being against it, and they tell me their reason for being for it or vice versa, then at least we can agree to disagree. And it could be a well-thought-out thing, and I think that that builds respect. I know it builds respect for me to about that other person, that legislator, because at least they thought about what they did, and at least they had a reason for what they did. And I may disagree with that reason, but that's honesty. That's trust. And that's really the one thing. And I'd be interested to see a poll of Americans, how many actually trust our government today. I bet it's not very many. I really bet it's not very many. So before I shift gears here again, I asked the political rhetoric generator to generate me another piece of random rhetoric. And so the one I have now is, unlike myself, my opponent wants an America where MSNBC cronies and ExxonMobil executives can corrupt our medical dramas, entertaining hours of entertainment on that thing. So switching gears here, Obamacare. We've got about 10 minutes left. If you want to call in about anything, you got to do it quick, because we are going to stop tonight hard at 8 p.m. Eastern time. You can call in at 858-683-1326. And when they prompt you, you got to press the number 1, or else I don't know you want to talk. Those of you that are listening in the queue right now, that's how that works. So Obamacare, this thing continues to be more bad news, which I've predicted all along. This is going to be a debacle. 74% of small businesses will fire workers or cut hours under Obamacare. And this is being done because they're trying to escape the law. Now, these are small businesses, right? I mean, this is small to medium-sized businesses that can downsize themselves to the point where they don't end up falling under it. And the big businesses, they fall under it anyway. And half the big businesses want this anyway. They want to get rid of their insurance anyhow. I've talked to and followed a number of large businesses that fully expect and fully plan on dumping healthcare as a benefit completely once Obamacare kicks in and let the employees go play on the exchange and be done with it. But anyway, this study, 74% of small businesses will fire workers. Some other things in it, 77% continue to think that small business owners think that the U.S. economy is on the wrong track. But small businesses are more optimistic about their local economy and their individual business. They think they've probably survived the worst of it and think they're going to be able to survive what's coming. The majority, 61% of small businesses do not have plans to hire next year. Now, that's important because, as I've discussed on the show in the past, small businesses are the road to economic recovery. They're the ones who drive our economy out of recession. And if the majority are not going to be hiring and 74% of them are planning on cutting workers, what you're talking about is continued recession. And that's what we should expect, continued recession. Concerns about regulation, generally. have increased from 35% last quarter to 42% in this previous quarter, which I guess that's Q2. So Q1, which is January to the end of March, was 35%. Q2, which is April 1st through June 30th, is now 42% are concerned about increased regulations. 88% of small businesses support addressing entitlement spending as a way to resolve America's growing financial challenges and escalating debt. 83% support congressional efforts to reform the tax code with the focus on making it less complex. Again, that's a regulation. Regulations cause businesses heartache and spend time complying with regulation rather than focusing on their business. 81% of small businesses believe the immigration system is broken and needs to be reformed. And in a future show, we're going to go over a bunch of immigration stuff, but that's going to be almost a half show or a full show. We're not going to do that today. 90% of small businesses support easing EPA regulations and opening up more federal lands for drilling because many of these small businesses directly feel the brunt of increased transportation costs and the core costs of their goods. And that's definitely an issue. So this is where we are. Obamacare is not doing well. And as a result, another study that came out on July 2nd shows that 52% of Americans disapprove of Obamacare. So we're over half the country now disapproves of Obamacare. That's from Gallup. That's not some right-wing poll. That's Gallup. You know, that's a problem. Let's see here. And on Obamacare, the other last thing on this, union leaders are now worried that Obamacare is going to destroy the health and well-being of America's working class. Duh. And this is the amazing thing. The unions were lockstepping with Obamacare in 2009. It was so stupid. There were Tea Party people that were trying to tell the unions, guys, it's going to hurt you too. We promise. This is bad for you too. And because of the partisanship involved, the union, no, this is good. This is good. Well, we've now passed the bill. We've now found out what's in it. Remember, Nancy Pelosi, we have to pass it before we find out what's in it. We now know what's in it, and it's not good. It's not good for small businesses, and it's not good for labor, and it's not good for us. Who's it good for? Well, temporarily, it's good for the insurance companies, and it's good for the government, and that's it. Those are the only two groups that are like, oh, yeah, woohoo, Obamacare. Everybody else, you, me, the unions, small business owners, going to turn out bad, folks. Really, 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 really bad. There's still time. We can still reverse this thing, but it's going to take people with some guts to do it. And Obama's going to dig in his heels. We know that. But there's time. We can undo some of this now. I mean, yeah, some of it's already been done, and some of it's going to be really hard to undo. But if we continue to let the full implementation happen, it's going to be that much harder to get rid of it. You know, that's got to be the push. We've got to get rid of this thing. It's bad for everyone. It's bad for everyone. Oh, a lot of news this week about Detroit going bankrupt. And they filed for bankruptcy. And what some people missed was that a judge has ruled and said, nope, you're not allowed to declare bankruptcy. Sorry. So the city, apparently, is $11 billion in the hole. That's the city, is $11 billion in the hole. Of that, apparently $9 billion of it is the city's pension. The judge in this case has said that it is unconstitutional under the Michigan State Constitution to declare bankruptcy, because that bankruptcy would absolve the city of the $9 billion that it is owed to, or that the city owes to its pensioners. And in the Michigan State Constitution, which, by the way, Kentucky has the same thing, the pension is, I can never remember the right word. Insoluble, I never remember that right word. Involatile. Involatile, yes. Basically, the pension, if the city goes bankrupt and there's no money to pay anything else, they must pay the pension first, no matter what. No matter what, they're on the hook for their pension obligations. And so basically, this judge has said that they can't file bankruptcy because they can't be absolved of the $9 billion of the $11 billion that the city is in the hole. And this is the funny part. It's also not honoring the president who took the auto companies out of bankruptcy. And she told the media, quote, "I know he's watching this," he being Obama. And she has faxed a copy of her order to the president. And she is specifically looking for Obama to bail out the city of Michigan's $9 billion pension obligation. This is going to be a mess. If they do that, it's going to set a precedent for all kinds of bailouts around the country. I mean, in Kentucky, the estimates vary, but it's around $30 billion over the long term for the state pension that we're in the hole. And we're a relatively small state. Are we going to bail out every state's pension system? I mean, California's been in bad shape for a while. We're not going to be able to pay these things. It's just not going to be possible. I got a minute left, and I wanted to bring this up, and I wish I could hammer it more, but the court has told a reporter that leaked CIA information that they must expose who it was that gave them the information. And basically, in a 2-1 decision, has ruled that the media does not have the right to let the people know what's going on, even if that information is leaked to them. And the dissenting opinion says exactly that, that this is a terrible thing for journalism, that it's going to make it so that we don't have the media does not have the ability to allow the American public to know what their government is doing. Again, accountability. Our government has to be accountable some way, and the only way it can be accountable is if we know what's going on with it. How else are we supposed to keep it in balance? There's no way. We have to know what our government's doing. So we have to keep pushing for this, folks. We have to keep pushing for transparency in government, that the government must let us know what it's doing in our name. Well, folks, that's the end of the show. Thanks for tuning in. Tune in again next week for another edition of Liberty Unbridled. Tune in to the other shows on the network as well. Until then, see you all next week. Hope you stay cool and take care. Thanks for tuning in. Good night.